Hello and welcome to Sonnetcast, William Shakespeare's sonnets recited, revealed and relived. I am Sebastian Michael and this is Sonnet 46. Mine eye and heart are at a mortal war, how to divide the conquest of thy sight. Mine eye, my heart, thy picture sight would bar. My heart, mine eye, the freedom of that right. My heart doth plead that thou in him dost lie, a closet never pierced with crystal eyes, but the defendant doth that plea deny, and says in him thy fair appearance lies. To sight this title is impanelled, a quest of thoughts, all tenants to the heart, and by their verdict is determined the clear eye's moiety and the dear heart's part, as thus: mine eye's due is thy outward part, and my heart's right thy inward love of heart. Sonnet 46 is the first in a second couple of sonnets that take a more abstract approach to dealing with separation while employing a fairly established classical trope, in this case a conflict between the eye and the heart over which of these two should own, in inverted commas, the young lover. Similar to Sonnet 44 in the previous pair, Sonnet 46 can ostensibly stand on its own, but it nevertheless serves as the foundation for its counterpart, Sonnet 47, which follows on from it directly and really needs to be read as an extension of it. We will therefore again look at both sonnets together in the next episode, whilst concentrating here on Sonnet 46. And so, what does Sonnet 46 actually mean? Mine eye and heart are at a mortal war, how to divide the conquest of thy sight. My eye and my heart are at a mortal war with each other over how to divide the spoils that come from the conquest of your sight. Editors tend to point out that battles between the eye and the heart are a Renaissance commonplace, and so this poetic situation in which the eye and the heart argue over whom the young lover belongs to and whether he therefore should be kept in the heart or in the eye is not an entirely original one. The dispute stems from the eye having seen the young man, which is here treated as a conquest in its own right, and considering that the poem appears to be written while Shakespeare is away from his lover, this is likely to be in a picture. Sonnet 47, which directly follows on from Sonnet 46, will strongly support this supposition. Mine eye, my heart, thy picture sight would bar. My eye wants to ban the heart from looking at your picture. Implied is because the eye doesn't want to let go of it. My heart, mine eye, the freedom of that right. In response, my heart wants to bar, here in the sense more of deny, my eye the freedom of the right to do so, namely to stop it, the heart, from seeing your picture. In other words, my eye wants to stop the heart from seeing your picture, and my heart says that my eye has no right to do so. My heart doth plead that thou in him dost lie, a closet never pierced with crystal eyes. The legal overtones of the sonnet continue as the heart, here personified, now enters his own plea by saying that you lie in him and that he, my heart, is a closet which has never yet been pierced by any crystal eyes, meaning that no eye, no matter how clear and piercing, has ever been able to actually look inside a heart. A closet, in Shakespeare's day, is either a small private chamber or a chest where valuables are kept, which strengthens the idea of the heart being a private, secure, enclosed place, the innermost part of the human being, where therefore those things are kept that are of greatest value, including the much-beloved young man. And, of course, the idea that the loved one resides in the lover's heart is one we have come across in Shakespeare before, most notably in the confidently hopeful Sonnet 22 and the much more complex and uncertain Sonnet 24. It, too, is, as we noted there, a poetic commonplace. But the defendant doth that plea deny, and says, "In him thy fair appearance lies." The I, who is the defendant in this scenario, denies the plea entered by heart, and says that, on the contrary, your beauty resides in him. The notion that beauty is in the eye of the beholder is proverbial, and although Shakespeare himself doesn't ever put it like that, the phrase as we know it today is first recorded in print in the 19th century, many poets before him and Shakespeare himself elsewhere in his work have said as much. To side this title is empanelled a quest of thoughts, all tenants to the heart. In order to decide this case and the question of the legal entitlement to the possession of your image, a jury of thoughts is enlisted, and these thoughts are all tenants to the heart, meaning that they are not impartial. They lease their metaphorical land on which they can grow and prosper from the heart, and so are, in a sense, beholden to the heart. Many editors emend the quarto edition's side in to side this title to a curtailed version of decide, so it reads to side this title, spelt with an apostrophe and a C. There is, however, a perfectly valid dictionary definition of to side as a transitive verb, meaning to assign to either of two sides or parties, as found in the New Oxford English Dictionary. And even if there weren't, and Shakespeare had effectively just made this up on the hop, it would still be perfectly clear what he means, so I see no good reason to mess with his words here. And note, of course, that empanelled here is pronounced in four syllables. And by their verdict is determined the clear eyes moiety and the dear heart's part, as thus. And by the verdict of these thoughts is determined which part the clear eye receives and which part the dear heart receives, as follows. A moiety is defined as a part or portion, especially a lesser share, according to Oxford dictionaries, and the fact that the eye appears to be given a smaller or less significant portion is not surprising, since the jury of thoughts that makes the decision is skewed in favour of the heart. And here correspondingly determined is also pronounced as four syllables, determined. Mine eye's due is thy outward part, and my heart's right thy inward love of heart. The judgment, though not impartial and apparently unequal, seems fair. What is due to my eye is your outward appearance, and my heart has the right to keep and protect your inward love. This is an obvious resolution, but it is also the first time the inward love of heart of the young man is mentioned in this sonnet, and so the eye actually gets what it wants, your image, and so the verdict seems to bring about a new peace between eye and heart, as Sonnet 47 will shortly attest to. The duality of outward beauty and inward worth is a recurring theme, not only for Shakespeare, but in Renaissance poetry and indeed in classical literature generally. In fact, we touched on it when we were discussing Sonnet 14 and noted there that in the ideal person of Shakespeare's era, these two aspects complement each other to strike an agreeable balance. Sonnet 46 does not speak of inward worth directly, but in a similar way juxtaposes the young man's appearance with, in this instance, his love, and resolves the conflict between the poet's eye and heart in the most obvious and straightforward way possible. Your appearance belongs to my eye, your love belongs to my heart. There are certainly no surprises there. Formerly noteworthy is the legalese tone of the sonnet. Shakespeare every so often uses the language of court in his writing, and what is striking here is how this case is brought, heard, and judged. We don't know whether Shakespeare has given a great deal of thought to this and is consciously signalling to us how he views things, or whether he writes this sonnet more or less off the cuff, but what he presents us with is a fairly jealous and possessive eye that doesn't want to let go of the image of the young lover and share it with the heart. The heart then appears to bring the case to this imaginary court to claim his title in the young man, thus turning the eye into the defendant. They both give reasonable evidence, and the panel of jurors then passes its judgment, whereby this jury is stacked from the outset in favour of the heart, which suggests that as far as Shakespeare is concerned, heart has and should have the upper hand. This need hardly surprise us. Time and again in these sonnets, the young man's beauty is eulogized only for a point then to be made that what really matters, though, is what's on the inside. Virtue, truthfulness, constancy. Very soon in Sonnet 54, Shakespeare will ask the youth the rhetorical question, "Oh, how much more doth beauty beauteous seem by that sweet ornament which truth doth give." And it will be fascinating to note much later in the series, when Shakespeare talks about his mistress, the dark lady, how he repeatedly concedes that she is far from beautiful, but he loves her all the same. With Sonnets 44 and 45, we felt we detected a certain detachment and speculated that this may well have to do with Shakespeare having resigned himself to being away from his lover for an extended period, and that, with no direct stimuli for his sonneteering, he resorts to poetic commonplaces to keep himself occupied and to deal with his unsettled feelings for his young lover. Sonnet 46 very much aligns itself with this vein. It constructs a decent enough argument and displays the familiar compositional skill, but even at the time it is unlikely to have astounded. It is only half of a pair, though. And the real point of Sonnet 46, what I said about it being able to stand alone earlier, notwithstanding, is actually being made in Sonnet 47, as we shall see very shortly. If you've been listening to the last few episodes of this podcast, you will already be aware that as this one goes out, I am days away from my first appearance at the Edinburgh Festival Fringe with a spoken word solo show. It's called Some Sonnets and a Bit of Bach. And in it, I try to find out what, if anything, William Shakespeare and Johann Sebastian Bach have in common. And so if you are in Edinburgh this year, do come and say hello, come and see the show. It's on at 11:30 at Greenside Infirmary Street. And if you're not going yourself but know of anybody who is, then of course please do send them along. It would be lovely to meet you or them there in Edinburgh. Full details, together with the transcripts of these episodes and the sonnets, are at sonnetcast.com. In any case, though, I hope you will join me again here on Sonnetcast, where we recite, reveal, and relive the sonnets of William Shakespeare.